Dope and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550. Gonna be that in an
hour. Just opened up my current notebook. Here it is from the fabulous Two Sisters Vineyards in Niagara-on-the-Lake. This little baby. I don't know. Maybe sometimes I do write on the backs. What I tried to do, I had a strategy with this one, like a new notebook. What's better? Don't answer that. I mean, just rhetorically speaking, what's better? What I wanted to do with this one was use the backs of pages for like important sort of evergreen kind of things like stats. So I don't know that I want to have to dig so hard for Bills receiving touchdown leaders the last 2 years. Boom. I know this is the kind of thing I would have used the left side for. There it is, the left side. But I made myself angry today just randomly opening the notebook to World Cup survivor strategy stuff. There, you just saw it if you're watching. I know that was a riveting moment. And so survivor pools, right? One more thing we have to care about as the football season comes closer. This World Cup one, so excited to do it. Probably a little bit naive, but two $50 entries, something like that. Okay. And, all right, well, you have to use a certain number. You can only use a team once. This is back, you know, remember the World Cup? So you can only use a team once. You had to pick four teams to get through the group stage. And then, I mean, sometimes you had to pick two in one day or in one little section. But really, basically, you're trying to get all the way to the end and win. And it's winner take all. If more than one person gets to the end, then they split the pot. It was maybe $100,000, you know, in a prize pool. So here I am going along. Everything's going my way. And I get to the semifinals. And let's see. It was France against Spain. And it was England against Argentina. And I had to get them both right if I was going to have any chance of winning, because I had used Argentina and I had used Spain. So the only way for me to win was to pick from France or England, but they both had to win because I needed the other one in the final. What happens? They both lost. And it just annoys me to look back at this because I did so well, but I didn't win. Isn't that betting for you? I did so well. It all made the process. He shouted from his front door as his family left in a, you know, in a limo. That's not my original thought, but I love it. No, I was right. As your kids and your wife leave forever. Last time they ever, you know, you ever see their faces is when you're screaming at them how your bet on Morocco was actually correct. You know, a little bit dramatic. But so I didn't want to open to this page, but I did. And I was going to say this yesterday, and I want to preface it by saying that as somebody who willingly and excitedly signed up for the Seneca Casino Survivor Pool when Bulldog and I were there about a month ago when they launched it, and I can't ever say no. So I said, yes, I'm in two times, $50 each. I think it might have been the same thing. Two entries. And Tony, the cool guy that sat with us and basically laid out the whole contest, like, you know, you're going to have to come here to make your picks every week. Like, fine. And then I sign up and I take the papers back to my desk and put them in my work bag. I'm like, I'm going to have to come back here every week unless I lose, but I don't want to lose. So anyway, fine. I'm glad to be a part of that and I'll do my best. This one though, this soccer one, and it's Splash Sports, Kelly in Vegas, who I don't know, but she became someone I knew of from Joe Ostrowski and Sam Panayotovich and their bet, you know, BetQL and BetMGM shows. she would be kind of a regular on there. Like, okay, well, I'll do this. This is fun. That was whatever. Like, they have one for every sport, World Cup, fine. But this one, okay. And I should have known from the beginning, and I hate to have soured on it, but I think the actual number was the most entries you can submit is 133. Here's Brad getting into me for my little 260 fantasy teams like it's anything. The most entries you can submit is 133. Whatever, doesn't even matter. Say it's 100. I entered two times. It got to the point where out of almost, I have it here, but I'm scarred. I don't want to even look at the page. Out of 4,000 some hundred number of teams, a handful were left, and I'm one of them. Both my teams didn't advance. I had Germany at one point. They lost. But still, like I was in the mix to win the tournament. But I knew, and I am somebody, you know, Bulldog talks about spreadsheets with all these teams. I am like this, and it's not the best use of time, but I went through everybody who was still alive, everybody's entry. All right, what do they have left? And there were teams that were drawing dead. Then there were teams that had everybody. I thought I was in position A by having France left. It turns out you needed to have Spain left. Anyway, I do all that, quote, work. I do all that research. Like, all right, well, what is the odds play, you know? And what you realize is some of these entries are people that did the 133 max entry thing. And there's probably a pool of people that have gone in together on this stuff. I think that's the circuit tournaments. I know it is. I think like a lot of these big tournaments, you're playing against groups. And when it gets late, you're seeing those groups bet against themselves because you're just trying to get one to the end or whatever. I mean, if it's more than that, even better. And it's so depressing. The one year I won, I wonder if Jeremy might be listening and remembers this. The one year I won a Survivor pool, it was, I don't know, 10, 11 weeks into the season. It was like here, Paul maybe ran it. So it's everybody from work and all of Paul's friends and I don't know, 50 or 100 people. And we get to week 11 or something and it's like me and Jeremy. And like, let's just chop it. Let's just split it. But you're basically, what it is whether it's like that direct or just broader, you're working with your quote teammates, you're working with other people in the room to insure yourself some of the money. And, you know, I think that kind of ruins Survivor for me. I love the concept, but I don't want to play against, you know, person from the station, their wife, their son, their daughter, their dog, just because there's no limit. They're friends. Hey, come on in. We have a Survivor pool. Great. And then it's sort of like that one person becomes 20. And I don't know how you beat that. I mean, you have to just run perfect just to split it with four whoever's, you know, from, I don't know. I didn't even want to talk about this, especially because yesterday I got grouchy and I didn't want to be grouchy 2 days in a row. I had a different idea. And it was going to be sort of a donkey ranking. Donkey rankings. So last night, I'll explain. So last night on ADP Chasing Fantasy Football Podcast, I do with three friends, Jacob, Davis, and Pat, really focused on best ball fantasy stuff. That show it's famous for among its legions of fans. I mean, it's a 5,000 to 10,000 views every week for going off the grid. I mean, just the amount of time we've spent on that show this summer on Alexander the Great can really not be explained, but it happened. So last night they're talking about the big news in the NFL this week and what it means for fantasy. And one of them is the Giants signing Najee Harris. Like, all right, well, that's significant. I'm a fantasy player. I'm watching this podcast. What should I do about it? Do I want to draft Najee Harris? Do I want to not draft Cam Scataboo or Tyrone Tracy? What about Devin Singletary, who's still there? What about the rest of the Giants? And usually I'm the type to think and to say, look, nobody knows what's going to happen. Nobody knows who's good. Nobody knows really what the role is. When it's ever the least bit ambiguous, you really can't act like you know what's going to happen. But I got off on the Giants last night. John Harbaugh, Matt Nagy, Greg Roman, Brian Callahan. I still confuse Matt Nagy with Adam Gase. It's one of them. I think it's Nagy. John Harbaugh, Matt Nagy, Greg Roman, Brian Callahan. Can you imagine? Well, this is really a question for myself. Can you imagine if the Bills were in the current state of being the Giants and had gone like maybe more than a decade without barely ever being relevant at all? They're kind of a joke. And John Harbaugh comes with some credibility. That's fine. All these guys do. But in total, it looks like you were forced into, to me, it looks like you were forced into these hires. And so guys are just bandying around like what to do with the Giants backfield. I'm like, guys, here's what to do. Skip the whole thing. This is a terrible situation. It's never going to work out. We love Malik Nabers. We might even like Jackson Dart, but you can't expect the Giants to get this right. If you're calling Najee Harris, due respect, off a torn Achilles to help you because your more talented running back missed a block in a preseason game, you're in bed. Like, I was looking at, just, you know, being me, I was looking at running backs available on waivers in fantasy, and the names are just amazing because these are guys that were relevant in the NFL maybe like 2 years ago, if not last year, and they're not on teams. And, you know, in a different light, you wonder sort of what happens to these guys. Where do they go? Where does Antonio Gibson go, right? He was kind of good for Washington. New England tried him on, and then he broke. And so not everybody on this list goes into coaching. So you've got this long Leonard Fournette, who came by here for a minute. Devontae Freeman. These guys are even older than I mean, because, you know, maybe Freeman or Fournette have been out of the league for 3 or 4 years now, maybe more. So what happens to these guys? There are still guys on that list that would seem to be a better bet than Najee Harris, except for that the Giants want Najee Harris to not miss that block. That's what they want from him. I mean, the Bills could have done it if Ty Johnson is going to miss time. And it was third down. I mean, Allen did get hit in that game. But whoever the running, Frank Gore Jr. or Ray Davis, whoever the running back on the field is, whiffs on a block. Maybe the Bills, not knowing what was going to happen with Johnson, maybe they do know and are not worried about it, but say they didn't or were worried, they go into that list and find somebody who can play one specific role, which is not miss that block so that my quarterback doesn't get bent sideways. So the Giants go and get Najee Harris, and that's not nothing, of course. I mean, that's an important role in a team, but it just sort of like hit me hard that that's a team I do not want to be. And this is really the thing. So the Bills have been at this status for the last several years where it's good and bad. It's mostly good. They win all the time, and that's great. They haven't won in the playoffs, and that's probably more about what they're known for, which sort of inherently comes with they're good all the time. Like, you can't be this, well, frankly, perennial playoff loser if you're not good all the time. It's always double-digit wins, so it's good and bad. But what it has meant to us, and this is good to think about because you can get lost in those playoff losses, is that they have re-established what their place in the league is. And really almost like never before. Most of Bill's history is kind of sad. Like, the 70s were completely lost. You had OJ, but even that became a thing, like different kind of thing. So 70s, no playoff wins. 80s, not until the beginning, yes, the bookends of the 80s were interesting, but not like that exceptional. 90s, you have the Super Bowl years, and then they kept it up through the decade until then, poof, it all blows up, your legends are all gone, and you're into a 17-year playoff drought. Then you get Sean McDermott and Josh Allen, and you have what the last 8 years have been, which is really good. It's just that you're not seeing trophies. So I wanted to tell you the five teams in the NFL I think are the worst. Like, this is not the reverse AFC power rankings, and this is not even like specific to, not entirely specific to the current roster. But the Giants are definitely one of the five. The Giants have not been good in so long. They had a fluke year like the Bills had in 2017 where they weren't good at all, but they made the playoffs. They even won a game in that year, winning in Minnesota. But then they got crushed and they were exposed. Like, that's Brian Daboll, coach of the year. Great job. I mean, just, it's like the PDO Jack Adams winners in hockey. Great, you know, great. But it's not really that good. So the Giants have, when was the last time the Giants, even actually, I don't want to try this hard, but even the Super Bowl teams with Eli Manning were like, they tended to be okay teams that got rolling in the playoffs, perfect timing. Those were not dominant teams. Like, the Giants have had a couple of those over the years. Giants are on the list. No particular order here. The Arizona Cardinals have to be on the list. Like, the top five donkey teams in the league. Arizona. What are they doing? I mean, it's another new coach. The quarterback situation is what exactly? Jacoby Brissett, or maybe it'll be Carson Beck. They drafted Carson Beck, but I don't know how good he's actually supposed to be. Arizona, plus their history, Arizona for sure. Giants, Cardinals. The Jets can't be left off a list like this. I mean, this again is a point about how much fun the Bills have been, even though they haven't beaten Kansas City in the playoffs. You know, even though they haven't made it, it's still been mostly really exciting and fun and good. The Giants, the Cardinals, the Jets might be the worst of all of them. They're never good. It's the longest playoff drought in the league. 2010 or 2011, one of those, is the last team they were in the playoffs. Last year, they were in the playoffs. It's always kind of embarrassing, too, with the Jets. The owner's grades before the league was able to strong-arm their way into keeping those private, which, you know, thanks. And his kids being using Madden ratings to make help on personnel decisions. I mean, come on. The Jets, the Giants and the Jets take pride in this. The Giants and the Jets, New York, quote, New York teams, for many years, I would say, are two of the five most embarrassing NFL teams, if that's not too strong. Giants, Cardinals, Jets. Now I need two more. And it's a little bit tougher. I feel like there's a tier break here. Because those three, I think, cannot be left off. I'm going Carolina. A defending division champion. But I'm going with Carolina. Because, right? In this game on Saturday, Bryce Young, first overall pick. That's going nowhere. The coach is kind of cool for what he's been able to do. Baker Mayfield and back in Seattle. Geno Smith in Seattle. Like, he seems maybe capable, but I think I'm staying on the spot that Carolina is in really bad shape for this year. And I think Young might be the worst starting quarterback in the league. They're going to try with Jonathan Brooks. We just had Carolina. I'm not going to go deep on them, but to me, they make the list. Then I need one more. And part of how I started thinking about this was that the Bills are going to Cleveland, and poor Cleveland. I'm going with Miami, though. Miami's the number five team on this list of five teams. I'm not saying Cleveland. I think Cleveland has been, I know, don't laugh. I think Cleveland has been largely unlucky. I think it was an ownership-driven decision, mandate, with what happened with Watson. And that, you know, that the Bills suffered from some of that over many years. But it's not quite the same to me as when you're just kind of always bad and it sort of makes sense that you're bad. To me, the Browns might have to be the honorable mention on a list like this, but I just don't want to give them my vote. I feel like the Watson thing could have worked out And the whole controversy about it, as the Bills go to Cleveland today and practice with the Browns tomorrow, I'm sure we'll be hearing about Watson and, you know, what happens there tomorrow. But the controversy about it, of course, was his off-the-field transgressions, not to put it too mildly. Not exactly, not necessarily what kind of player he still was. It turns out that he's such damaged goods. And, you know, if that changes, that'll be kind of a miracle at this point, I think. But such damaged goods that I'm not sure I want to blame the Browns for that. I think you can, and everybody has, blame them for the decision to invest in Watson as a person and as a face of the franchise. The fact that his playing ability has so suffered, and then a couple of bad injuries. I think his shoulder might be shot. You've got torn Achilles maybe two times. I just think they've run up against a little more than they deserved, the Browns. And the Browns, by the way, have had some great players. Chubb at running back, Myles Garrett, Wyatt Teller. Like, the Browns have had some great players. Mayfield is one where that could have worked, but Mayfield was banged up, and this is where really their lack of stability helps to undermine them. So the Browns are a fine, you know, a fair choice for the top five donkey franchises. But I'm going with Miami instead. Miami is what, as a franchise? Last time they won a playoff game was the year 2000. And that was a pretty rich history up until that point. The Dolphins owned the Bills in the 70s. And even if the Bills kind of owned them back, it wasn't because Miami was what the Bills were in the 70s. Miami was mostly good in those years, but they couldn't crack the Bills like 92 in the AFC Championship. And then it's Don Shula, Jimmy Johnson, Hall of Fame coaches. And since then, they've just been this mostly kind of middling, screwed up team situation. Just, you know, the Brian Flores stuff, they haven't really had too often, at least. I mean, Tua was this, but too often, like the high draft pick quarterback that made sense. Miami hasn't done a lot. They're sort of like the drought Bills in this way, where they just kind of tried to patch it together. So Miami makes my list, the Browns don't. And it's not even, I don't think I did that great a job of like exactly specifying what the criteria were for this, but I just wanted to find like how close do the New York Giants come to being like the worst franchise in the league? Pretty close. And maybe John Harbaugh fixes that, but I doubt it. I just think there's just too much. Last night on our podcast, the conversation turned to, do these new coaches, having never really drafted him or seen him before, know what Cam Scataboo kind of is as a runner? Like, of course they don't. Easy for me to say. Of course they don't. They just know him. He does backflips that don't turn out. He seems like kind of a nut. Gets hurt. I'm not sure what they think they have in him. Just one example. So there it is. Just what you wanted. My donkey list to start the show. Okay, that's over. Paul Hamilton coming up next. I want to talk some Sabres. The Sabres got good. And best not to ignore them this summer, which I feel like I've kind of done. Not intentionally. So we'll talk some hockey next. 4 o'clock hour, Mike Tanier and Daryl Ryder. Daryl's in Cleveland. We'll talk to him about the Browns and this week. Sal joins me at 5:30 from Cleveland, if he isn't there already. Thanks for listening. No Bulldog until Monday. This is Mike Shope on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
That's what they called me in college, was the bone.
He has the facts to back up his opinions.
People ask me, well, how are the Sabres going to, are they going to win tonight? I don't have a clue.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
I wanted to talk to Paul Hamilton about the Sabres today because I missed them both. And I'll just reiterate that when it comes to the Sabres, not Paul, of course, but when it comes to the Sabres, not in a while have I gotten to, what, August 19th and felt like I missed them. Sometimes it's actually felt like a relief that we didn't have, because it was usually bad news, you know, guys were leaving and what wasn't being done. However, this summer is coming toward a close, and it might be worth it to talk about also what hasn't been done. Paul Hamilton on the Wester Hotline. Paul, you up for that conversation?
Yeah. Did you know I was watching Caitlin Clark last night in Toronto?
I did not.
I didn't know if you knew that.
I did not. So yeah. That the WNBA is in Toronto now.
Yeah, they normally play where the Marlies play, which is like 7,000 or 8,000 people. Mm-hmm. But
perfect.
When Caitlin Clark shows up, you play where the Leafs play.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And it was sold out. I figured it was sold out about 5 days ago. I just went on Ticketmaster to see if I could get a ticket. There were five empty seats in different sections, which actually surprised me. So I sat three rows from the top of the place. It was like $100 Canadian. It wasn't bad. I didn't think it was a bad price. Enjoyed it.
That's kind of cool when you can do that, if you have enough facilities where you can do that. Because it feels to me like 7,000 or 8,000 might be the perfect amount. But then if you have this kind of draw, you need bigger than you have it.
That happens a lot with the Indiana Fever. They wind up in Dallas, it happens.
Okay.
You know, they show up and all of a sudden they're in the big arena instead of whatever arena that, the WNBA team is playing in. So
sure.
And a lot of the players, it's kind of funny to listen to them. They're fighting it. And you don't have to like Caitlin Clark or whatever, but you got to admit, they weren't playing in those arenas before Caitlin Clark showed up, whether you like her, you don't, or whatever.
She's a superstar.
And people, like, that's why I was there, to go see her play. I've wanted to see her play, and I got the opportunity, and she had a good game. I do watch most of her games on TV just because I do enjoy watching her play. And, I mean, she's doing things assist-wise that have never been done in this league by a lot. And she's still, I believe, around the third or fourth leading scorer in the league. And her team's in first place. You don't have to like her as a fan, but you have to respect what she's doing for the league.
Sure. Apologies if this is not a perfectly fair comparison, but what I'm thinking of with this point you're making about how the Toronto team was able to move to the, basically, what, 2.5 times the size of the arena, or whatever it actually is,
right.
Reminds me of my days with the Buffalo Blizzard.
Uh-huh.
And the Blizzard played in the arena in Buffalo, indoor soccer, and almost would never open up the 300s. So you had, several thousand people, but it still came off as, in my mind, it came off as like, the atmosphere isn't quite what you'd want because the building is maybe half full, like the top, the big, all the 300s are empty. Then, but there were a couple of teams in the league. Cleveland was one that played in smaller buildings. Cleveland played at the Cleveland State Convocation Center, which might have been 7,000 or 8,000. It was perfect. And you would get an atmosphere that you just could not get in the big league arenas that were not even half full. So it would have been great for the league and for the fan experience, I think, if you went to smaller buildings. Not every city had the perfect fit. Cleveland did. If you went to smaller buildings and had like a packed house, and maybe the Toronto team has that when they're in the Marlies Arena, and then, last night's an exception. But just a better fan experience when you're in a place that's not too big for the event.
It sounds like it's close to that, because there was a Tempo season ticket holder in the GO Train sitting across from me who, was just staunch on Caitlin Clark is overrated and all that. But we did get into the Tempo. And she said it is so much fun having them in that smaller 7,000-8,000 seater. And she goes, tonight was fun, yeah. But she said it really is nice to have them in that smaller setting where the Marlies play. By the way, they won the Calder Cup this year. And I've been in there for playoff games with the Marlies, and it is kind of a fun setup
sure.
that they have.
Rochester's like that,
sure, because I was in there for a couple of playoff games, and so it was well attended. And matter of fact, now that I think about it, the Sabres may have had a preseason game there not a while back. So it doesn't matter. I've been in there for games, and she's right. It is fun to watch, and she said it's fun to watch the Tempo in there. This is their first season, as you mentioned a little bit earlier, as they're an expansion team, and it doesn't sound like, from what at least she was saying, and she's a season ticket holder, that they could support like being in, I don't even know the name of the place, wherever the Leafs play.
Mm-hmm. Scotiabank now?
Thank you. It's been like nine different things. you know, they really probably couldn't support that right now.
I mean,
having them in Coca-Cola Center, I think it's called, used to be the Ricoh Center, is more of an attraction and more fun, she said.
Yeah, and just to finish the point, if it hasn't already been made, but like you and I have both been around the American League, and some of those smaller towns with smaller buildings are great times.
Yes.
I mean, I'm thinking about Portland in the past, or, you know, Binghamton, Syracuse,
Hershey.
Glens Falls, Hershey, Providence, you know, like, even though the building is not necessarily even 10,000 seats.
Rochester.
But, yeah, Rochester.
Now, that's a little bit bigger than some of the buildings you're mentioning, but when the Amherst went to the Eastern Conference Finals a couple of years ago, that place was rocking.
Yeah, that's really fun.
I mean, and now their capacity is somewhat over 10,000. Not a lot, but a little bit, they were pretty much filling it up for that by the time they got into the Eastern Conference Finals.
Well, Paul, I just wanted to have a little bit of a temperature check moment on the Sabres, as we're now within a month of training camp and preseason games even. I mean, it always is like this, where it doesn't cool off first outside. It just sort of hits you that hockey is here. And when we spoke about them a month and a half ago, I mean, after free agency started, July 1st, okay, well, you never know exactly when to draw the curtain and like, all right, that's it. And here we are now to August 19th, and there has not been any movement. There isn't Connor Hellebuck. There isn't some other Alex Tuck replacement, right? Not that we're necessarily expecting that. But where is your mind at on sort of how likely it is that their current roster is going to be their roster?
Probably. And, I mean, prices need to come down. And that doesn't mean that they won't. They need to come down. And you know, Jarmo Kekalainen is not going to pay the prices that are out there right now. A name that has been out there a little bit, and then it seemed like Columbus might have been willing to trade Marchenko, who is 26 years old. Now, he would be a guy that, not this year, but you would have to sign to a contract fairly soon. But this is also a guy, his last couple of years, 27 goals last year, 31 goals the year before, 67 points and 74 points. And then I say to myself, and I always say this, why would Columbus want to get rid of him? And, well, if you can get the right trade, you can maybe restock your team a little faster. If you can get a couple of really, really good prospects out of a team or you know, for a talent like that. And he was a hotter commodity, it seemed like, before the draft than maybe he is now. I don't hear too much about him right now. His teammate, Werenski, was the same way. You know, it was like, and then all of a sudden he comes out and says, well, I don't want to be traded. You know, I want to play in Columbus.
Right.
But what does that mean? How many times have we heard that from players? And, you know, it didn't. So just throw that name out there a little bit, that was a name that was being kicked around as somebody available in the NHL. He's 6'3". He's not Alex Tuck by any means. His goals and point totals aren't too far away. I don't think he does some of the other things that Alex Tuck does, but I certainly think he would be a good addition to the Sabres, depending on what they would have to give up for him. And then knowing that, all right, you're going to have to probably sign him to a contract soon too, so you better be sure you can do that.
Well, I just want to ask again, at what point, if there is one, where you don't ever slam the door, I guess, on these kind of moves.
You don't.
But at what point, like, how does the calculus work for the Sabres or an NHL team where you're like, all right, well, Hellebuck or some other player, we would have done it for a certain price. We kind of wanted to at a certain price. But do you not get to a point where you're about to get to camp and then it becomes more disruptive, or feel like maybe you want to get into a season and see if you have a bigger problem than you wanted to have? And then maybe something happens, but it kind of feels to me, my instinct is that a trade between maybe like next week and October 1st, the opener, is just kind of weird.
Yeah, and let's say the problem with the Hellebuck trade was the Sabres were willing to give up the 4th overall pick, but they wanted the 8th back, and Winnipeg wouldn't do it. And Buffalo said, okay, then we're not giving you all that stuff if we're not getting, you know, if we're not flipping spots in the first round. You could still do that. You could look okay, because Bjork is the guy that Winnipeg took. A lot of folks thought Buffalo might take him at four, because he was like one of those wild cards at forward from Sweden that a lot of scouts liked. So, you know, and then they wind up taking Rudolph. All right, now both teams know who they have. Let's say Winnipeg approaches you again. And now you know, well, okay, they're willing to do it. So now we get Bjork, who would as pretty much our first-round pick this year. They get Rudolph for their first-round pick this year. Is that something, now that they know what the names are that are connected to it, would Buffalo be more, or I'm sorry, would Winnipeg be more open to it? Who knows? So, you know, but you have to kind of reconstruct the trade, because the trade was, well, Winnipeg's going to get 4 and 8. Well, okay, now there are names put to that. All right, we're not giving you 4 and 8, but now that you know the names, do you want to do it in Buffalo's case, you could say, do you want to do it the right way?
Well, apart from any specifics, though, I still want to try to get this across. Like, whenever camp opens, like 3 weeks away, thereabouts,
yeah.
I mean, do you think that's a deadline for teams that, all right, well, now Luukkonen, say, or any, whether it's Rudolph or someone else, like, now we're at a point where guys report, and we don't want them, I feel like this is right, but I'm asking you, like, we don't want them looking over their shoulder about trades anymore, right, for a while. Like, you show up for this season, you're on this team.
We could almost be there now. I don't think there is a deadline, so to speak. But there's a point, and I think we've hit it, where it is likely a big thing isn't going to happen. You always know it could. But, you know, it gets to a point where it's likely that it won't.
Right.
Now, what else is different? Luukkonen is another one that's different. Is Winnipeg on his no trade, which kicked in on July 1st? You could have traded him before the draft or at the draft. He didn't have a no trade then. It's only a few teams, but is Winnipeg one of those few teams? And then if it is, well, that shoots the trade right there.
Right.
You can't even talk about it basically, because you know that's who they would want, and he would have to waive it to go to Winnipeg. So that possibly could have finished it right there if Winnipeg is on that list.
So you're kind of saying here, like, we might be at that point already where we're sort of like the poker game is over. Winnipeg is interesting, though, Paul, because they might have pressure to do the thing that the Sabres don't. That's always been true here.
They did go get a goalie. It's not like all of a sudden if Hellebuck's gone, they don't have a goalie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if they were to get Luukkonen, then Luukkonen and Skinner are their goalies.
Yeah.
They could be worse than that. I mean, you could say, well, why did they go get a goaltender then? Especially Skinner, because he likes to play a lot. Hellebuck likes to play most of the games. How's Skinner going to react sitting around playing 15 games or between 15 and 20 games?
Are you with the Bisons at all this week?
I am, actually. That's where I'm talking to you about.
You're there now.
Game finished up just as we were speaking. The Bisons had a great opportunity. They loaded the bases on walks and then struck out 3 times in a row in the 8th inning, down 1 run.
Oh, wow.
Couldn't get a sacrifice fly or a bounce out or anything. So it's rare you see that, where a pitcher loads the bases with walks and the relief pitcher comes in and strikes out the side and you can't get that tying run across the plate. So they did lose by a score of 2-1.
That's not great. We had a 22-0 game last night in the majors.
I didn't see that.
Milwaukee beat Seattle 22-0. The first shutout that large in Major League Baseball since 1900.
Did any position players pitch?
I would hope. I don't know. I just saw Julio Rodriguez not know how many outs there were and throw a fly ball that he caught over the wall.
I didn't realize, I believe it was Pat Malacaro told me, and I don't remember the number, you have to be up by or down by a certain amount of runs now to put a position player in. Is it 10 maybe?
I don't know, but he's right. You can't just do it anytime you want.
It's a newer rule. It's a rule that, you just can't do it. I want to say it's 10, but please don't quote me on that.
No,
it was a while ago that Pat told me that.
It's a Dave Roberts and the Dodgers rule, because they got in games. You know, this isn't something we love about how sports has evolved, but it sort of aligns with data stuff. where the Dodgers have these big division leads and they'll get down, I mean, not that many runs and just basically throw the game because they don't really need it that badly. They'd rather save their bullpen than win the game.
Right.
And so that's when baseball put, might not have just been the Dodgers, but that's when baseball put the rule in, like, all right, you can't do that anytime you want. Like in extra innings, in tie games, the Dodgers were using position players to pitch because, like, all right, well, I just don't want to blow out my bullpen. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, we don't want that. That's when they put in the, you know, the runner on second as well in extra innings,
oh,
too.
Yeah, like, I call it the ghost runner.
I never know what to call it because there
that's
is somebody
what I call
standing
it is the
there.
Ghost runner. When I call a game and I go, our ghost runner is at second base, yeah, so that's just my term for it.
It might be the most popular term for it, but I can't do it because there's a guy there. Unlike when we're playing as kids and the ghost runner is not, there's nobody there. It's just
there's
somebody,
nobody there. Yeah.
So I don't know. It's never really zombie runner. Like I've never really found the right phrase for my taste.
So to answer your question, today was my scouting day, and on Saturday I will be doing the game, and Pat Duke will be on TV.
Very good. Paul, thanks for your time.
Yeah, take care.
Paul Hamilton on the West Shore Hotline. His appearances on WGR brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this. Next hour, Mike Tenier, longtime football scribe, and Daryl Ryder on the Browns. The Bills headed to Cleveland today for a joint practice tomorrow and a preseason game on Saturday. Sal Capaccio still to come. This is Mike Shope on WGR.